Chapter 7. Once he had paid Patty's alimony, there was not too much of Rod's salary left for extravagances. But one of these was the big cream Maserati. Although it was a 1967 model and had done nearly 30,000 miles when he bought it, yet the instalments still took a healthy bite out of his monthly paycheck. On mornings like this, he reckoned the expense worthwhile. He came twisting down from the Kraal Kop Ridge, and when the national road flattened and straightened for the final run into Johannesburg, he let the Maserati go. The car seemed to flatten against the ground like a running lion, and the exhaust note changed subtly, becoming deeper, more urgent. Ordinarily, it was an hour's run from the Sonder Ditch mine into the city of Johannesburg, but Rod could clip 20 minutes off that time. It was Saturday morning, and Rod's mood was light and expectant. Since the divorce, Rod had lived a Jekyll and Hyde existence. 5 days of the week, he was the company man in top-line management. But on the last 2 days of the week, he went into Johannesburg with his golf clubs in the boot of the Maserati, the keys to his luxury Hillbrow apartment in his pocket, and a chuckle on his lips. Today the anticipation was keener than ever, for in addition to the 22-year-old blonde model, who was prepared to devote her evening to entertaining Rodney Ironsides, there was the mysterious summons from Dr. Manfred Steiner to answer. The summons had been delivered by a nameless female caller, describing herself as Dr. Steiner's secretary. It had come the day after Frank Lemmer's funeral, and it was for Saturday at 11 a.m., Rod had never met Manfred Steiner, but he had, of course, heard of him. Anyone who worked for any of the 50 or 60 companies that comprised the Central Rand Consolidated Group must have heard of Manfred Steiner. And the Sonder Ditch Gold Company was just one of the group. Manfred Steiner had a bachelor's degree in economics from Berlin University, and a doctor's degree in business administration from Cornell. He had joined CRC a mere 12 years previously at the age of 30, and now he was the front runner. Harry Hirschfeld could not live forever, although he gave indications of doing so, and when he went down to make a takeover bid on Hades, the word was that Manfred Steiner would succeed him as chairman of CRC. Chairmanship of CRC was an enviable position. The incumbent automatically became one of the 5 most powerful men in Africa, and that included heads of state. The betting favoured Dr. Steiner for a number of good reasons. He had a brain that had earned him the nickname of the computer. No one had yet been able to detect in him the slightest evidence of a human weakness. And more than this, he had taken the trouble 10 years previously to catch Harry Hirschfeld's only granddaughter as she emerged from Cape Town University and marry her. Dr. Steiner was in a strong position, and Rod was intrigued with the prospect of meeting him. The Maserati was registering 125 miles an hour as he went under the overpass of the Kloof Gold Mining Company property. "Johannesburg, here I come," Rod laughed aloud. It was 10 minutes before 11 o'clock when Rod found the brass plaque reading Dr. M. K. Steiner in a secluded lane of the lush Johannesburg suburb of Sandown. The house was not visible from the road, and Rod let the Maserati roll gently in through the tall white gates with their imitation Cape Dutch gables. The gates, he decided, were a display of shocking taste, but the gardens beyond them were paradise. Rod knew rock, but flowers were his weak suit. He recognised the massed banks of red and yellow against the green lawns as cannas, but after that he had no names for the blazing beauties spread about him. "Wow," he muttered in awe. "Someone has done a hell of a lot of work around here." Around a curve in the macadamized drive lay the house. It also was Cape Dutch, and Rod forgave Dr. Steiner his gates. "Wow," he said again, and involuntarily braked the Maserati to a standstill. Cape Dutch is one of the most difficult styles to copy effectively, where one line in 100 out of place could spoil the effect. This particular example worked perfectly. It gave the feel of timelessness, of solidarity, and mixed it subtly with a grace and finesse of line. He guessed that the shutters and beams were genuine yellow wood, and the windows hand-leaded. Rod looked at it, and felt envy prickle and burn within him. He loved fine things, like his Maserati, but this was another concept in material possessions. He was jealous of the man that owned it, knowing that his entire year's income would not be sufficient for a down payment on the land alone. "So, I've got my flat," he grinned ruefully, and coasted down to park in front of the line of garages. It was not clear which was the correct entrance to use, and he chose at random from a number of paved paths that all led in the general direction of the house. Around a bend in this path, he came on another spectacle. Though smaller, it had, if anything, a more profound effect on Rod than the house had. It was a feminine posterior of equal grace and finesse of line, clad in Helenka stretch ski pants, and protruding from a large and exotic bush. Rod was captivated. He stood and watched as the bush shook and rustled, and the bottom wriggled and heaved. Suddenly, in ladylike tones, there issued from the bush a most unladylike oath, and the bottom shot backwards, and its owner straightened up with her forefinger in her mouth, sucking noisily. "It bit me," she mumbled around the finger. "Damned stink bug bit me." "Well, you shouldn't tease them," said Rod. And she spun round to face him. The first thing Rod noticed were her eyes. They were enormous, completely out of proportion with the rest of her face. "I wasn't," she started and then stopped. The finger came out of her mouth. Instinctively, one hand went to her hair, and the other began straightening her blouse and brushing off bits of vegetation that were clinging to her. "Who are you?" she asked, and those huge eyes swept over him. This was fairly standard reaction for any woman between the ages of 16 and 60, viewing Rodney Ironsides for the first time, and Rodney accepted it gracefully. "My name is Rodney Ironsides. I have an appointment to see Dr. Steiner." "Oh." She was hurriedly tucking her shirt tails into her slacks. "My husband will be in his study." He had known who she was. He had seen her photographs 50 times in the group newspaper, but in them she was usually in full-length evening dress and diamonds, not in a blouse with a tear in one sleeve, nor pigtails that were coming down. In the pictures her makeup was immaculate. Now she had none at all, and her face was flushed and dewed with perspiration. "I must look a mess. I've been gardening," said Teresa Steiner unnecessarily. "Did you do this garden yourself?" Rod asked. "Only over a little of the muscle work, but I planned it," she answered. She decided he was big and ugly. No, not really ugly, but battered looking. "It's beautiful," said Rod. "Thank you." "No, not battered looking," she changed her mind, "tough looking." And the chest hair curled out of the V of his open-neck shirt. "This is a protea, isn't it?" He indicated the bush from which she had recently emerged. He was guessing. "Newt Ends," she said. He must be in his late 30s. There was greying at his temples. "Oh, I thought it was a protea." "It is. Newt Ends is its proper name. There are over 200 different varieties of proteas," she answered seriously. His voice didn't fit his appearance at all, she decided. He looked like a prize fighter, but spoke like a lawyer. Probably was one. It was usually lawyers or business consultants who came calling on Manfred. "Is that so? It's very pretty." Rod touched one of the blooms. "Yes, isn't it? I've got over 50 varieties growing here." And suddenly, they were smiling at each other.